actually smells like meat grease.
Okay. That's a great way to start the podcast.
That literally smells like meat grease.
Okay. Well, this is... okay, firstly, before we get stuck into any of that, how about you sing our song for the day?
I want to ride my bicycle, I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle, I want to ride it where I like. Bicycle, bicycle. Yeah, great Queen song.
What was I going to say?
So yeah, what were you going to say, mate?
I was going to say, like... This was a very impromptu podcast recording day because we thought maybe we should get you in here and actually do some work because you've just taken yourself out completely, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
So let's talk about that because I think that I know you've been on social media and I know you've been chatting about it, but I think maybe a good place to talk about because I want to talk about what happened for anybody who doesn't know, but then I also want to talk about you know me, any lessons you've learned from it and what it's actually teaching you that this has happened to you.
So, I mean, I think it already started over in it started probably 18 months ago, this whole concept of letting go and not, you know, the whole concept of what it is to actually let go. You actually have to let go. And what you actually have to let go of, well, you got to let go of your old self, but you've got to embrace the self that you want to be. And sometimes when you have that desire and you start to build a view and you start to create a relationship with the person that you want to be, I think that life, you know, in its own way creates scenarios that are perfect in order for you to actually embrace that person and allow yourself to be who you want to be. And so it was a lot over the past 18 months or two years.
That's some of the stuff we've been talking about in other podcasts.
On other podcasts, yeah. And then so, you know, there was a lot of plant medicine. There was a lot of the process of mentally letting go, emotionally letting go, and then also embracing how I wanted to be and who I wanted to be. And doing a lot of work with my own coaches and my own shamans and doing all that sort of stuff. And then I end up in South America and I'm working with one of my shamans and I go and I do an ayahuasca ritual, just me and him. And through the ritual, I'd done the ayahuasca and I know how ayahuasca normally affects me. And I didn't have that same effect. And I just remember thinking, oh, well, I must have eaten or what have I done wrong? And I remember I threw up a few times, like really hurt. And then I didn't have the same experience that I would normally have through an ayahuasca ceremony. As I was leaving, I said, I'll throw that bowl of vomit out. And he goes, no, I want you to leave it there because he said, I'm going to pray over it. There's a lot has gone on here and I want to help you to release and da da da. So I went inside into my room and I got into bed. And then I felt, fuck, I feel a bit sick. So I went into the bathroom and I threw up. I came back, I got into bed, and then I started tripping balls. Like, then the ayahuasca started working. I was
That's
lying
what
there.
You were expecting when you were with him.
When I was with him. Afterwards. But it happened afterwards when I'd left. Mm. And so during the process, I wasn't able to let it work. I wasn't able to let go. So it did it in a way that was outside of the process. You know what I mean? And I remember lying in bed and I was thinking, Jesus, I'm going to have to ring someone because I'm really looping like a fish here. And then I just fell asleep. And then...
Could have just shouted down to Lisa and Mick who were downstairs.
Lisa and Mick were down. Lisa, Mick, I'm tripping balls. And so then I came home and we had a 38-hour flight on the way home. During that flight, we had about 15 hours on business class. So we were able to get some sleep. But 38 hours is a lot.
In airports and traveling, it's just a lot.
Airports, lounges, blah, blah, blah. It's a lot. And, you know, I think it was... Three flights.
That one was three flights.
Three flights.
Nine hours, 15 hours, and 4 hours, but then all the waiting time in between.
And then all the waiting in between. So it's a 38-hour flight. Yeah. And I remember getting home, and I got home on the Thursday.
Friday.
And I hadn't slept very well. I went to bed that night, didn't sleep very well, you know, had a bit of jet lag, was up moving around. Ollie was the same. He wasn't sleeping well. Got to bed on the Saturday night, same thing, didn't sleep well. Got up on the Sunday, and then thought, I'll go for a ride. The boys.
Smart.
And I went out, I contacted a couple of lads, went out, met them, headed out on the bikes. And I was, you know, I was having a really good run. Mm. And what people don't realize is that a lot of the, like a lot of the trails that we're on are unsanctioned trails, which means they're not built by the councils or they're not built by, Three Chilies or anything like that. These are built by the riders themselves. And they're through the hills of Western Australia. And they're amazing runs. Like they're very...
Bit hairy.
They're very dangerous. Mm. They're dangerous runs, you know. And I'd come to this particular run called Tombstone. And Tombstone is a jump, and then you go over this jump onto this rock around a corner, and then you come into this rock roll, which is called Widowmaker. And I've done Widowmaker a few times, but I've stacked it maybe twice on Widowmaker. So I came in with my buddy. He came around first. He said, okay, watch me do it. I stopped the bike. He broke all the way down the rock roll, which is about a 2-meter rock roll, all the way down the rock roll. And then I came in behind him, boom, 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 boom. We high-fived, got it nailed. He said, okay, before we go home, let's just do one more run. So I'm like, oh, okay, we'll do one more run. So we come back around, and he's flying, and I'm flying, and we're moving. And when I say we're moving, we're probably doing 30 to 40 kilometers an hour through the bush, and we're flying over the jumps, bang, bang, bang. I come to the rock roll, and I come in, and I brake, but I'm moving, but I brake, and I'm just full of confidence because I've just had a really good run. And then I didn't break enough. And then halfway down, I realized, oh, my God, I'm going way too fast. So I slid on the brakes to try to ease into it. And then as that happened, the back wheel came up over me and then flung me over. And I'm pushing down on the handlebars. And as I push down on the handlebars, I go crack into a pile of rocks. And next of all, I feel crack, crack, crack in my back. So my T4 and my T5 went. And then I'm in a pile of rocks. And then I'm lying there. And I can't breathe. I'm like, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. So I'm talking to myself. And I'm like, okay, just calm down. So I calm down. And then I take a breath. I take a breath in. And then I look over. And I go to grab my phone with my left hand out of my right pocket. And as I look at my hand, my knuckles are down where my wrist is. And the internals of my palm are stuck out of the side of my hand. And then my forearm, where my hand meets where my hand meets my wrist, all my skin is rolled up like a sock would be if your sock rolled down your ankle. So I'm looking at my hand and I'm thinking, shit,
what's gone wrong?
Oh shit, I'm in trouble. So then I look at my other hand, and my other hand, my wrist is like an S. It's like an S bend, but I can feel my hand. So I get my hand in, I pull my phone out, and I'm in so much pain, like I'm screaming in pain. And I just go, Siri, call my mate and put it on loudspeaker. I get through to my mate. I said, mate, you need to come back. I'm after having a stack. Come back. So he comes back and walks back in, and he's like, oh, Jesus. So he sits me up, and I said, just get my helmet off. So he pulls my helmet off, and then he goes, and I look at him, and I said, mate, you're going to have to call an ambulance. And he goes, no, we're going to walk out. So what you got? I go, I'm going to get you up. Just sit there, take a breather. And like, he's in shock. He just didn't know what to do. He was just in a state of shock. He was like, what do I do here? So he goes, okay, so let's stand up. So we stand up and we're trancing through the bush, and I'm holding my hands up in the air. And the pain is so much that I feel like I'm going to throw up. Like I think, oh, I'm going to vomit, you know. And I'm just in this state of, oh, and he's ringing people going, okay, somebody come and collect this bike. And then the guys are ringing in. He's put it up on the feed. Mitch is after having a stack. Is anybody around? Then he rings Ange. Ange comes around the corner and she pulls up. We walk out and I'm on the street. And she looks at me and I'm like, you need to get me to the hospital right now. Ollie jumps out of the car. Anne just brought Ollie. Ollie's in the back of the car. And then I'm sitting in the car. I'm holding my hands up and I am screaming in the car, like screaming in pain, just yelling in pain. We drive. She takes me to urgent care. Like, instead of taking me to the emergency, she thinks, oh, we'll just go to urgent care.
She was in shock too.
She was in total shock.
Because the fact that they'd, I think, walked you out as opposed to calling the ambulance, she didn't think it was as serious. I don't think that it actually was, because of the fact, I think, that they walked you out. She was just, okay, well, we need to get him to a doctor. She said to me since.
And she was just thinking urgent care is going to be faster than emergency, because you get into emergency, they're going to bring you in, sit you down, da-da-da.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we pull up outside urgent care. She gets out of the car and goes inside. Ollie goes with her, and Ollie is white. Like, he's just, he's in shock. And then there's a guy outside, standing outside, and I'm screaming from the car, get the effing nurse. And he looks at me and he goes, are you all right, mate? You all right? And I'm like, no, get a nurse. And I'm screaming. So about 10 minutes goes past, and then this woman runs in and says, somebody needs to come after this chap in the car. So the nurse comes out and she goes, take him straight around to emergency. And when you get around there, go into where the ambulances are, jump out of the car, run up, press on the button, bang on the window, and they'll come out and see him straight away. So she drives me around to emergency. I get in there. Every corner she turns, my back is like, oh, every corner of my hands are like, oh. So every bump, every touch in the road is just, she's just like, I'm sorry, honey. I'm just trying to get you there as quick as I can. They come running out, and they're just like, oh, my God, stage 3 trauma. Next of all, there's 6 nurses. There's 2 doctors. They've got stretchers. They've got framework. They pull me out of the car, lie me on a frame. They go, okay, mate, you're going to be fine. We're going to get the pain under control in a minute. They get me inside, and they just monitors everywhere, and then they just started jabbing me with painkillers. They're just like, okay, we're going to give you this dose of this.
Everything was only working for like 10 minutes at a time, though, 10 minutes.
And then as I'd come out of it, I'd be just like, oh, my God. And I'd be just saying to them, guys, you have to get this pain management under control. I just can't. And like I'm white, and then I'm almost passing out, and I'm like, it was just horrendous. And then... The guy.
But can I say, though, they were really good over
there. Oh, my
there.
God.
They were phenomenal.
Oh, my God. I said it before. Like, the amount of care that came out of those doctors and those nurses was just... The nurses were just brilliant. Like, they were just so, like, yeah, this has happened, you know, but you're okay, and you're with us, and we got you now, and you're going to be fine, and it's just trauma, and we deal with this stuff all the time. We're going to get your pain management under control. Don't stress. You're going to be okay. And I remember sitting there thinking... These guys are just angels. Like, they're just so fucking wonderful. They're the most underappreciated people in the world. You know, like, I think about you know, the Grammys and the Emmys and all, and these people getting awards. None of those fuckers should get an award. The only people that should be getting awards are teachers, police officers, carers, nurses, anybody that works in an industry of, you know, being of proper service to the world. That's the people who should be getting Academy Awards. Nobody else should be getting that stuff. But I remember the doctor came in then and he said to me, look, he said, I need to keep you awake. And he said, I have to put you under because I've got to put your hand back into place. If I don't put your hand back into place, he said to me, this is going to be way worse. They're going to have to operate and it's going to be way, way worse. So he said, I'm going to have to put you under, but he said, I can't. He said, I have to get you to breathe for yourself. I can't put you out where you're not going to be able to breathe because he said, you've drank too much water and I'm afraid we'll get water in your lungs. Then we have infections. Then we've got all sorts of problems. So I'm like, okay. So he said, I'm going to give you a dose of 110 mils of ketamine. And he said, that's going to put you under.
Gave you all the side effects, potentials.
He said,
stuff.
This is what's going to happen with the side effects. He said, sometimes people have entities come and talk to them and all that sort of stuff. And he said, what I'll do is I'll give you another sniff of this other thing that will stop that happening. And he said, you'll be fine and you'll go under. So they gave me the ketamine. That was a whole fucking experience on itself. And I remember lying there and I was out of my body. I was completely separate to my body, but I could feel them moving my hand and putting my hand back in place, and I could hear them talking, and then I couldn't hear anything. And then I was in South America.
Yeah.
And then I was with all the clients in South America. I was sitting around a fucking bonfire, and they were all talking about the accident, and they were all talking about how I was and how their experience.
This is all under the ketamine.
This is all under ketamine. And then the doctors are in South America with me. And we're around the campfire, the shaman is there, and everything is happening, and they're all... And I'm completely and utterly convinced that that's where I am. Mm-hmm. And I'm completely and utterly convinced that this is they're conversating about me, and they're conversating about how grateful they are, how they've loved the experience, how, you know, this is just a part of what happened, and that... And as I come out of it, I'm thinking, everybody's in on this. And I come out, and I remember coming back and he said, to do it, he said, we have a gap of a changeover of the doctors and the nurses. So he said, I only have 30 minutes to do it. And he said, as the nurses and doctors come in, he said, it's quiet in the hospital right now. If it gets too pandemonious, he said, you're going to be in all sorts of trouble. So as I came out of it, there's like 8 doctors around me. Nurses, care, everything. I'm wired up to every machine. And then as I'm coming out of it, they're just like, okay, Mitch, how you going? Yeah, you coming through, Mitch? Yeah, how are you? And I'm thinking, what the fuck?
I've got videos of you and you're like trying to convince doctors, man, that ketamine stuff, you should try that. And he's going, I don't know if the medical board would approve. Because, yeah. And you're like, maybe not. And you were just like in your like best of spirits, but also like, fuck off. That was intense and insane.
It was so intense. It was so friggin' intense. The whole experience was so intense. And it was just like the whole process has really been about, like, there is literally nothing I can do little things for myself now The pain buried.
Well, even at the beginning, you couldn't even hold a teaspoon. You couldn't lift a cup to your mouth. No. And they've said to you that the most you can hold is a teacup.
Yeah.
Because you went in on, obviously, you went in to have surgery like within a week. So on the Friday, you went in to have surgery. So I think that was the best move because that way it was, instead of healing up and then having to do the whole thing again, you just, but what's happened is that your wrists have been under extreme trauma because of the fact that it's happened, and then you've gone and had surgery, trauma and surgery as well. Yeah. But it's you've really had to do, like right at the beginning, you couldn't even do anything, and still now you're not allowed to weight bear at all.
And I think now what's happening is, like, so they give you all your meds, and they're like, okay, you got to take this amount of medication to keep, because it's all about keeping the pain under control so that you can start to move your hands, right? So my right
this
hand
one
now,
is amazing how
my right
it's
hand
moving
now is
now.
Pretty good. I can move it probably to about 85% of its movement.
Can you oppose your little finger now?
Yeah,
I can touch
my little finger, and I'm just doing physio on this all the time, and that's 8 days out, 9 days out. In my left hand, which is where the most amount of trauma was and the most amount of damage, I probably got about 70% use of it now. I can touch all three front three fingers. I can move it backwards and forwards. I can almost clench a fist. And that's within 8 days.
Of surgery.
Of surgery, yeah. And so surgeries, they basically go in and they put all the pieces back together, and then they bolt all the pieces to the bone. And so I've 11 screws in my left arm and a plate, and I've 8 screws in my right arm and a plate, and everything is just bolted back in. And now it's just a process of time.
Rehab,
rehab and time. And they just said to me, you just got to keep moving your hands. Just keep moving your hands. Mm-hmm. Don't let them lock up. You don't want to have a situation where you've got carpal tunnel or anything like that. Mm-hmm. The only way around that is you've got to keep moving your hands. So I'm at it all the time. Pain management is okay. It's
you're still having your moments, but you're definitely getting better, right?
Yeah. And so pain level would be a.
But it's not the wound, because the wound is quite like you've got scars here and here, like both wrists, and they're quite large, and then on the top.
On the top, yeah.
But it's not really the wound. It's more the actual
it's more
internals.
The movement. And just this constant
throbbing
of about a level 3 pain, you know. So you just, there's only so much you can put up with that. Yeah. By the time you hit 8 o'clock at night, you just want to go to sleep, because
so
the only way to stop the pain is to sleep.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, at 8 o'clock, I'm like, okay, just put me into bed and just take the meds, go to sleep, and then I actually get to rest. Do you know what I mean? But the rest has been good. The other thing that's happened is, like, Ange has just been, like, I saw a level of Ange that I never even knew was there. You know, she's just been absolutely incredible. I think, you know, when she picked me up on the morning, she said, anything, don't worry about it, don't stress, we'll manage it, we've been through worse, don't stress about it, but I'm just not wiping your arse. And on Monday morning, Trent turned up and he installed a bidet into the house. And what I, anybody who hasn't got a bidet, let me tell you, I'm building a house down south at the moment.
It's your new favourite thing.
Oh my God, every single toilet will have a bidet. Every single toilet in the house will have a bidet, because they're just so good.
Well, it was a big worry, because like being not able to do some things, like you can't even shower yourself properly, like you can because you can sit under the water now and you've got your things, but it's a lot, right? So what have you realized, do you think?
Well,
you
I mean, there's like, first off, very humbling, because, you know, like, I had nurses washing me, wiping my ass, you know, like, nothing you could do about it. But in people in nature are just lovely, just in essence, people are just genuinely good. We're all just genuinely good.
The amount of outpour of love that you received.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Trent was there the next morning sorting the, like, it was like a day after the accident, because you were there in the hospital for the extra day. But by the time you got home, he was there with that and sorted, installed, done.
Yeah, yeah.
And people, like, you've got, you know, people coming around giving you guys food, just like making sure that you're looked after in all the ways, you know. And I think it's really lovely.
Yeah. And I mean, I've had to let myself really feel that. Do you know what I mean? Like, let myself really feel that people really cared. You, Mills, you were there fucking right from when we turned up in the hospital for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and days and days and days. You just never left my side, which is just, I'm so appreciative of that. That was just so, you know, you were like, I was like, Millie, it's okay to go home. No, I'm not going home. I'm going to sit here with you. And it was great. I mean, most of the time you sat there and watched me sleep and sweat.
What was I going to say?
But I really,
it's funny.
That.
Yeah. It's funny on the, because we were at the netball grand final on the Saturday. This is the day after we got home. The two girls were in the netball grand final. And you were saying to me, Millie, you said, I'm just taking today. You said, I'm going to go back into the gym tomorrow, but my body just needs to rest.
Yeah.
And the way you said it, I was like, well, it probably does. We'd been like on 11 or 12 flights over the course of 21 days with the trip, you know, going to America and then South America. But I feel like there's a part of you that asked for it, like you said those words, my body needs to rest. And I feel like a part of you had kind of asked for it, like kind of asked for the knowing maybe of the letting go. Do you know, like if you look at any of the books on the wrists and stuff, it's all about receiving and it's all about letting go of control. Do you know what I mean? So I think you'd kind of, I know that you'd learnt it, but it was maybe, I don't know, sometimes you just need to learn it in a way that you just never expect. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
never.
I still think I'm trying to piece together.
It's not about trying to figure it out either.
No.
But yeah.
But I still think I'm trying to piece together, you know, what the fuck? You know, like, oh my God, this is so fucking full on. You know, they call it trauma because it fucking is trauma. Like, your life stops in a way that, you know, like so many people have said to me, you know, Mitch, could have been a fucking paraplegic.
Well, that's the thing that frustrates me the most is how close you were. Not frustrates you, but I think something you can tell your riding buddies is if anybody gets in that situation again, do not walk them out of them. Yep. Get an ambulance. It's not worth it. The cost of the ambulance is like far. Like you've got fractures in your T4 and 5, and it's only that they were very minimal that you're able just to do this. Like, and you wouldn't have been able to weight bear anyway because of your back for a certain amount of time. You know, now that your wrist, like by the time these are sorted, that's going to be okay. But I was talking to, you know, your sister-in-law. I was talking to people like while you were like not fully making sense. You were trying to convince people to take ketamine. because they were saying, oh, we found out you got the fractures in your back, it's like, well, he might need braces, he might this and that, and he might not be able to do. And that is one scenario, but if you had to, like, it could have been so much worse.
Oh, my God.
It's it's very, very, you bring to the forefront your, like, you know, the gratitude for your ability to move and do things. Do you know what I mean? I think maybe we're to hold this space, hold that thought, and then, you know, when we reconvene, we can talk about maybe if there's any more lessons or any more learnings from it. But I think there's definitely a lot. I think I noticed that there was so much, like even just the one moment after you'd come out of the ketamine because you were still, they were worried that you were going to choke, right?
Yeah.
And you just said that you felt a bit nauseous and you might want to throw up.
Yeah.
And the doctor pressed this button.
Oh, yeah.
And I have never seen that many people running to a bedside. There were people from everywhere. I'm like, what the fuck? And they, because you'd had the back injury, you had like a team of, there was probably about 20 people in that room at one point turning you over so that you weren't injuring your back and that you weren't going to choke. And people just came from everywhere. But it really, like, you know, part of the reason I was there was because Ange has got the responsibility of 3 kids that she's running around doing things with. Yeah. So it was my way of being able to help. But when I was there then, and then when you moved over to Royal Perth, it was like it didn't matter where you were. Everybody was just really, really lovely.
Oh,
really
they're
but I think that's also I was noticing you and how you interacted with people. It didn't matter that you were in pain. Like, you were like, I'm in fucking pain, and you were asking for the meds that you needed. But in between those times, I don't know. I feel like there's a part of you that's softened in a way since then, because it's like you can't. I don't know. It's like that you've not that you're not kind anyway, but you were just really appreciative, and you really showed your appreciation to the nurses and the people around, and you did that a lot through your humour and through your, you know, through the banter that you had with people. But I think they were responding to you in that respect as well. Do you know what I mean? And you know, we were in the trauma ward in RPH, and she was, as we were leaving, remember, she was saying, the stuff we see here is like, it's quite full on. So this is, you know.
I said to her, you know, how do you, I said, well, how is the country so many Irish people in here? Like, oh, every 5% of them, the doctors and nurses were all Paddies. And she goes, yeah, they're all Irish. And she said, because nobody wants to work on this ward. And I'm like, why? Because it's trauma ward and they just get abused and da-da-da-da-da. And like, I was really surprised at that. I'm like, wouldn't you be totally appreciative that you're getting the care, the level of care that you're getting? But she said, it's not really like that. You know, there's a lot of crazy stuff goes on here, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, hands down, you guys did a great job. Really, really appreciate it.
So let's watch this space and see how the healing